coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Seven Deadlies. Wrath. Like, no, I didn't. Oh, shit. All right. Let's do a show. I think we're, are we warmed up sufficiently here?
I think so.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew. With me is your other host, the Jedi Cole Houston. Are you out there, Cole?
If you'd like Jedi Cole Houston to be your co-host, press 1. You've selected Jedi Cole Houston!
If you'd like Eddie Medina to be your co-host, press 2. I would love it if we could press 2 and Eddie would just be like, hey guys.
I know, it's like, hey guys!
It's like, what? Where did you come from? I'm always here. I'm That's always true. Waiting here. He's like the Chris Christie of Hey Kids Comics.
Oh, wow.
He'll kill me for that. He will kill me for that. I'm sorry, Eddie. That was a bad analogy. You're like the Boromir of Hey Kids Comics. So, yes, you have found us at a very interesting times. As you know by now, we have a new president-elect of the United States.
Now, why didn't we do our caucus on Infinerse closer to the actual election? Probably because it would have been too damn depressing.
Right, I couldn't do it now. I couldn't, that's the thing.
I didn't realize that Dr. Doom would actually have even made it onto the ticket, much less.
No, you're giving Trump too much credit.
Yeah, that's true.
Crusher Creel.
Dr. Doom at least had experience as a world leader.
Yeah, like Strucker, maybe, possibly. Yeah. Maybe Zemo would be more like it. Like,
yeah, he's probably Baron Zemo because he's like with a mask glued to his face.
Well, you know, and we'll touch on that later. I don't want to get too heavy at the top because it's been a long, long week. But regardless of any of that, we're here to do a show. And we're here to do a show on another type of world leader tonight. What issue is this?
This is issue number 204. And every time I say 200 anything from 200 to 204 just now, there's a part of my brain that's going, that's more than 200.
That's a lot. That's hours. Yeah. That's hours. If you when you say the number the number of the show we're on, the any number preceding that number you gave is hours doing this show. That's
yeah.
Crazy talk.
Plus about, I don't know, maybe another 9 to 16%.
Right, of just
of hours beyond just this here number
of just us doing stuff. Yeah. Right. But
because some of them run a little long or a lot long.
Yeah, but today we come here to honor another leader. And, yeah, and
it actually becomes kind of like in the episode of The Tick with the terror back in the old 2001 series. And it's like there's this woman like kind of sliding around on a stripper pole. Like, are you my wife? No. What year is it? 2001. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Was that Mark Maron? I don't remember, but it seems like in my brain, that's Mark Maron. That's a lot. I'm sorry. That really struck me funny. That really struck me funny. That's a lot. Yes, it is. So what are we talking about tonight?
Oh, we are talking about... I'm still stuck on that's a lot.
I know, right?
We are talking about none other than, if the title wasn't a giveaway, which
right.
We haven't actually said aloud, but I'm hoping that you read what you clicked on, regardless of where you clicked on it, be it on the JCU or Cinelinks, which we're now powered by Cinelinks.
As long as you don't scream cage match again, we're all right. Damn it.
I so want to. But
save it for later. I'm sure you'll
we
have your
we are talking about none other than comic icon and legend and uber creator Stan the Man Lee.
That's right. Stan the champion.
Quotations, the man, Lee, not Stan the Manly.
Though
Stan the Manly was was my wrestler name, where I would come out in tights dressed as Stan Lee.
I was gonna say, wasn't he in the Muggerville Seven somewhere, like the like one of those kind of Shakespearean Greek mythology characters that he just writes it and it comes in, it becomes real, like Inkheart type situations.
He just sort of creates his own narrative that becomes the
oddly
becomes
enough
the reality, like in the character in like the literals in Fables.
Right, and oddly enough, the Stan, now I can't even say it, the Stan Lee of our reality did exactly that same thing, just kind of created his own narrative and went for it. And
I think that's a good point. He did sort of just will so much into existence that now has to be staggering to see that others are actually willing it into existence.
Right. So we have done a voluminous number of creator spotlights. Everybody from 5 issues or 6 issues on Alan Moore to our hotly contested.
You know what we haven't done in a while?
What?
An Alan Moore issue.
We should really just go, screw every issue from now on. It's all Alan Moore.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is actually Hey Kids Comics Spotlight, Creator Spotlight number 6, another damned Alan Moore spotlight.
In honor of our newly dystopian future, we will only discuss Alan Moore from now on.
That's right. Welcome to Alan Moore Cast.
God, that's what it was. That's for a long, I'd rather be talking about Alan Moore. But, you know,
yeah, this is our new show, Morecast, where we basically have somber discussions about all things Alan Moore.
About Alan. This one will be another in our 7-part series about Alan Moore's beard.
And we'll also play, really depressing songs in the background, like, Simon Garfunkel.
It's Tom Waits. It's just Tom Waits and us talking about Alan Moore. My piano's been drinking and Alan Moore. But no, we've done these, and what we didn't want to give you is the same thing we always bitch about when we talk about TV shows and movies and comic books for that matter, is everybody, we don't need the Stan Lee origin story, really. Like, we don't need to talk about Stan Lee created the Fantastic Four, or Stan Lee created Spider-Man, or Stan Lee created, Thor. Everybody knows that. If you're listening to the show, you know that. You know who Stan Lee is. So
it's like the three things that are universally known, even when some, troglodytic subterranean-dwelling entities are found. They know Superman's origin, they know Spider-Man's origin, and they know who Stan Lee is.
That's right, that's right.
The rest is, it's variable, but the three things all men, women, and children in the world have in common are those three bits of universal knowledge.
So we thought, instead of that, what we would do is reach out to our community and find some totally real, I swear to you, real, up and down real, take my word for it, these people are real people, to present us with some questions, some FAQ questions that they might want to know about Stan Lee.
Well, when people, the two things people love, Stan Lee and FAQ.
Right, they absolutely love.
Yeah, they want a FAQ when they hear about Stan Lee.
So we asked them, they provided, so we're going to do our best to answer these Stan Lee questions for you. So if you're out there and you're listening and you totally, really, honestly, totally, non-superlatively, not hyperbolically provided us with these questions, these real people, thank you, and we hope we do you justice.
Asking questions about an American icon that everyone knows absolutely everything about, apparently.
Right. So you're leaving us to do the heavy lifting. Which is completely understandable. So, without further ado, I do have the first question. It looks like it's from somebody that goes by the name of Chicken McGriddles. And Chicken would like, or Chick as I like to call him, would like to know, who was Stan Lee before comics?
Like to know why there isn't a Chicken McGriddle for my breakfast.
That's a good question.
We'll say that for...
I think if you'll pull a card out of this deck... And then if you shuffle it back into the deck and then you check McDonald's website, there is now a Chicken McGriddles for your breakfast.
That's amazing.
Yes, there is.
I know what I'll be doing tomorrow morning.
Check under your chair Everyone gets a Chicken McGriddle.
That's a
so good question, Chicken.
You know what's ironic is there is a Chicken McGriddles under my chair that I forgot about from last week.
I love the fact that up to 3 seconds ago, you didn't even know there was a Chicken McGriddle.
I didn't.
And now
I
there's
forgot.
One under your chair.
You know, what's ironic is I made it myself. I went to Chick-fil-A and got a regular sandwich. Went to McDonald's, got the McGriddles because it's a real day. Shoved the chicken in the little pancake bat thing, and then I dropped it on the floor and forgot about it.
So can we answer Chicken's question?
Yeah, I think we should because we've certainly done Chicken's name more than
right.
adequate justice. So what was the question?
Who was Stan Lee before comics?
I'm asking on behalf of the audience who've now lost track of another Cole old man brain tirade.
Who was Stan Lee before comics? So
who
before comics,
Stan
who was Stan Lee?
Lee?
Right, that's the question.
Comics, a.k.a. Stanley Martin Lieber.
That's a good answer. That's a good start. So, Stanley...
But there's Martin, more to the story than
you
just...
You could just stop there, but we won't.
I'm going to give you your money's worth, because you stood by me during that whole Chicken McGriddles thing.
That's right. He's been so many things. Like we said, he's sort of created his own narrative. We did, however, when researching Stan Lee, find out a very interesting thing that he did, which we had no idea about. So Stan Lee was...
Yeah, in fact, digging into Stan Lee, we discovered that, good night, if he had never become a part of Marvel Comics, he was definitely not just somebody who was sitting on their laurels in the meantime.
Right. I mean, he had a litany of jobs before he was in comics, and I'm sure this is a truncated list, but you know, he wanted, his dream was to, like all young upstarts, wanted to write the great American novel. I still want to write the great American novel, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Instead,
I've got a third draft of the first sentence of my great American novel.
Do you? The first sentence?
First sentence. Third draft. I wasn't happy with the first two, really, frankly. If you're going to write the great American novel, you got to get that down right.
I mean, he delivered sandwiches. My favorite line on and yes, we did use Wikipedia for a lot of this research, but my favorite line on his Wikipedia page was that he was an office boy for a trouser manufacturer.
I love the fact that it was a trouser manufacturer. That, like, they were so specialized in the garment industry. I just imagine this guy, like, you know, Mr. Weisenbein, who's like, oh, you have to understand that when the Weisenbeins got into the garment industry, we decided if you're going to do something, you do it right. You concentrate on one thing. For us, it was pants.
It was just pants. But no,
pants.
Here's my impression.
My great-grandfather liked pants.
Here's my impression of office boy for a trouser manufacturer. Are you ready? All right, I'm shaking it out. Okay, lemon face, lion face. It is. Here we go. Thanks, mister! That's it, right there. That's
wow.
My entire impression of an office boy for
trouser
manufacturer.
That's what the office boy, just like everybody was mister.
Yeah, everybody, and he they would flip him a coin, he'd bite it, and then he'd be like, thanks. I know a lot. Okay, so that was bad radio.
Oh,
but,
so like he would bring them, like, I should have like shuffled some papers here for you. Like,
yeah.
Thank you, young Stan Lee.
Yeah, then you like,
for my crumply papers.
At the crumply papers department of this trouser manufacturer. No, that package goes to crumply papers. Sorry.
The man who would go on to play Mr. Whipple. All right.
But yes, he also was an usher at a theater. He sold subscriptions to the New York Herald Tribune. And I think the most interesting thing is after high school, and this was a program that neither Cole and I knew existed, after high school he went into the Federal Theater Project.
Yeah, we had no idea there was such an animal, and I guess because it was a public works
Right, it was a New Deal.
Entity.
Yeah.
It was a New Deal entity, and there were literally anything you could think of that existed back then. I mean, if a new New Deal happened, there would be like a Department of Internet, social media, put people back to work department.
Yeah, there'd be a memes department where people are just making memes.
The Federal Department of Memes.
I want to work in that department.
The Bureau of Memes. Thanks, mister!
But this was a...
That would actually be one of the memes as a young Stan Lee going, thanks, mister! You just put that out and you feed that into social media and it explodes. Nobody knows what the hell it means.
And Stan Lee would be famous then. If Stan Lee was born now, that's how he would get famous now.
The thanks, Mr. Meme.
The thanks, Mr. Meme! Thanks, Mr. Meme. Thanks, Mr. Meme.
Mr. Meme was, by the way, was actually a villain in the Muggerville 7.
Can Mr. Meme be a villain in the Muggerville 7? Because
how could he not?
Brilliant. That's brilliant. I have so many ideas. But anyway, so this was part of the work's progress.
Mr. Meme was also an ABBA cover band that I was with.
That I was with.
I wasn't actually in the band. I was just hung out with them.
Yeah, right. It was a works project administration, work progress administration project. And the one cool thing that we found when we were looking into this was that there is a part of this called the Living Newspaper.
Yeah, so, that was the most fascinating. I mean, there's all kinds of programs, and you hear about this sort of thing, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, it makes sense. There would be, you know.
Right.
All kinds of different projects out there, but the Living Newspaper, go on.
But Cole and I have a theory about this. So here's the way Living Newspaper worked that Stan Lee was a part of, was that there were a bunch of researchers turned playwrights. They'd go through newspapers. They'd cut articles out. They would make short plays about these, like one- or two-act plays about whatever hot-button topic was happening, you know, in the mid to late 30s. They would put them on stage. They often were progressive or left-wing themed, which, keep in mind, this was a New Deal project, so yeah. Goes to code. And it drew criticism from Congress. So basically, they were taking news stories of the day, creating skits, plays, dramatizing them, and then putting them on stage.
Something like, I imagine sort of like, I'm Thomas E. Dewey and I've got this presidency in the bag.
Tip a canoe and fuck you too. What? That's way before that.
That's why they drew fire from the government.
Like, that's right. They went blue too fast.
Tip a canoe and F you too, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Well, I live in Tip City. I live where that happened. I live in Tip City. Tip a canoe city. Right here. In Ohio. That's its only claim to fame. But that was cool because Cole and I were discussing before the show that we really think that that might be a representation of like the first ever representation of, let's say, The Daily Show or At Midnight or something where you take a topical idea.
Or even Saturday Night Live.
Oh, nice. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
To take it way to, like, old people, to our older audience who might be tuning in because there's somebody in their 50s on the show. One of us. Okay.
So I think the answer to that question is, who was Stan Lee before comics? He was a lot of people on a path to becoming somebody. Like, he did a lot of different things. He was a lot of people on a path to becoming.
I think if you look at the path, it's almost like a file path to the stamp, to the man. You literally are seeing all of these little disparate pieces that are building, you know, it's like all the different parts are just sort of being added on, like one of those Transformers, you know, where it's a bunch of different ones. They all have to join together like Voltron.
Right.
And so, except that it's not anything like that. But, I mean, you know, he used to write obituaries. We were joking before the show. What the bombast in those obituaries. And he was in the Army Signal Corps during World War II. It's like, I didn't know you could be that enthusiastic with an Aldous lamp, but young... Young Corporal Lee certainly brings a dramatic new method to his semaphore.
Well, they tried to put him in the USO, but you know, 3 hours into his opening act, the chant for Where the Girls would come on, and that's how he really learned to cut it down. That's where he learned to really alliterate.
Where are the girls? Well, speaking of girls, let me tell you about this little firecracker I knew back in the Bronx. I started another story.
God, nobody say anything. Nobody, everybody, shut up. But no, they. But even his first job,
is that the girl's leaving.
But even his first job in comics, you know, he was working in 39. Let me be clear. The man is alive and working today. He started his comics career in 1939. That's insane. Think about that. But he started at Timely in 39 as an assistant, you know, and his job was filling the ink wells, doing a little proof, light proofreading, getting them lunch, erasing the pencils. So it's not so different except for, you know,
and
ink
saying,
wells.
Thanks, mister.
And saying, thanks, mister. Good job, boy Lee. Here's a shiny buffalo nickel for your troubles.
Thanks for filling my
inkwell.
Filling my inkwell. I was just right down to the bottom. I dipped my brush in. There was nothing. Next thing I know, the inkwell's full. Here's a nickel. Thanks, mister.
But I think that speaks to, you know, I've always had a respect for somebody that starts from the bottom and really works their way up. You know, and Lee did that. Lee started at the most mailroom position you can have in comics that isn't in the mailroom, which is filling inkwells in 1939 for Timely Comics, and now he is Stan Lee. And
just imagine with like one of those water watering can for plants, you know, or with the little fine spout,
right?
And just kind of going over to each inkwell and just. Or perhaps like a sommelier who would go over and like more ink, sir.
Right, he really brought the idea of an inkwell to life.
Yeah.
All's
well that ink's well.
Damn it. Oh, my God.
Stanley's 1930s private hell. Well, that went a little dark there.
But yeah, so I think that's your answer there. Like he always was driven on a path of becoming something more. And even back in the, you know, back in the beginning of his career, at the very beginning, Martin Goodman, who, if you don't know, was kind of the chief driving force for Timely. Even he said back then when Stan was 19 years old, and Goodman was the interim editor, you know, he said that he saw something in Stan Lee. He saw greatness in this kid, and that's why he put him out in front and had him working, because Stan Lee was doing something special, and he had the drive to make it happen. And I think if you want to pull through narrative for Stan Lee's life, it's the fact that he had the drive to make something happen.
Absolutely. And was in a position to be recognized for as much.
Right. Okay.
A lot of times it's just sort of, you know, where things fall.
Well, thank you, Chicken McGriddles, for that real, honest person, actual person, Chicken McGriddles, for giving
us. Thank you, Chicken McGriddles, and thank you for helping me find what the smell was here in the studio.
That was serendipitous. So let's move on. Let's move on to the second FAQ question, which is, it comes from a gentleman by the name of Rusty Freeweights. So Rusty writes us to ask this question. Does Stan Lee really deserve the credit he gets as the godfather of comic books?
Okay, Eddie.
that wasn't Eddie. That was a man named Rusty Freeweights.
Okay, I'm just saying, you know, it sounds like the sort of name Eddie would come up with to throw us off the trail.
It does, doesn't it? But let's answer not Eddie Medina. Hashtag Ditko was right. Hashtag BillFingerBang.com.
Hashtag
comic book conspiracy theories.
Yes. Is Stan Lee the giveaway is Stan Lee real or is he a figment?
I
think that was the giveaway that it was Eddie.
But no, it's a valid question. You know, does Stan Lee, because the thing about this question is there have been so many stories now that have come out in like the last 20, 25 years about Stan Lee appropriating or usurping other people's creations or taking credit where credit maybe wasn't due. Does Stan Lee's legacy stand on its own, or are we giving him too much credit in this industry for just being Stan Lee? I think is the question.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Cole?
Has Stan Lee become inflated by his legend beyond his actual contributions?
Right.
And Rusty Freeweights Medina. I say the nay. I really think that to a certain degree, anyone of note who has made a profound, you know, crater-leaving impact on popular culture is gonna, you know, the dust of exaggeration settles about them, but you can't deny them the impact that they made. You know, does the exaggeration invalidate the actual contribution that led to the legend? And I think in Stan Lee's case, I mean, there are arguably things that Stan Lee's version differs slightly or vastly from other people's versions who were there as well. But you cannot deny the fact that the man was constantly creating.
Right.
And constantly, in a time in comics when you just literally, even the publishers were willing to just throw anything at the wall and see what stuck. Up to a point for that stupid Spider-Man idea, but
that one really stuck.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, maybe we do have the right approach just to throw everything at the wall. But, you know, it was not until, and then that's one of those things that waxes and wanes in comics, because I've seen it happen over the decades where, you know, you get stripped down to the bare minimum. We're going to go down back to basics, just put out the titles that sell.
Right.
And then little by little, the inflation creeps back in. And, you know, I remember looking at the subscription page. And, there was a time the subscription page in Marvel Comics was an entire page.
Right.
There was just enough, you know, it would be nice to squeeze in here real tiny at the bottom as the order form to mail in. But the rest of the page was where you were checking off tick marks to all of the Marvel titles. Like, you know, at the same time, this is going to really baffle people. At the same time Marvel Comics was publishing Star Wars, they were publishing Two-Gun Kid.
Right. Right.
How is it in a world where Marvel Comics is publishing a Star Wars comic, Two-Gun Kid is still a viable monthly? And the reality was they were just putting out something for everybody because you – I guess Western stuff was still a thing. I mean, and to that point, Stan Lee created hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds, or co-created all of these characters. And, you know, to hear him speak of like the ridiculous monster series, where they would just tell simple little tales that everybody was telling. Their monster books were no different than anybody else's. Every single one of them was just some silly little tale about something like, oh, this island we've been on is a giant turtle, huh? And that's an actual, like, pre-code horror comic that I read. But with Stan Lee, I think one of his strengths was knowing who to tap for what. We've talked about this before on the show, like, Jack Kirby was the go-to guy if you just want to do silly monster stories, because he could take silly monster stories and silly monster names and give you these amazing, just weird-ass creatures that are a beauty to look at. I've seen some images where people have done like a jam session of all the Lee Kirby monsters. And you're just like, wow, those are bizarre but wonderful. I want to see some of them translated to the big screen, frankly. But and then you had all of that talk about just throwing out and seeing what sticks. And then at the same time, you're creating what became literally the most iconic. I think you could put 60 to 75% of Marvel's most iconic characters.
Yeah.
Were created by Stan Lee along with
someone.
With an artist and others. You know, you find yourself wanting to be like Brody and Mallrats. Let's do the list. No, the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, guilty. That was mine. You know, it's little wonder we get star-eyed about Stan Lee, because he was an architect of the modern Marvel comic.
Yeah.
And most of the characters he created are still with us to this day.
That's so amazing to think about, you know, that – In a world where we basically everything is disposed, in a world where everything is disposable, the creations of this man who's been in the industry since 1939 We still, and the crazy thing about it is, we still have fights when you deviate from the when you deviate from the Ditko Lee origin story of Spider-Man. Look at what happened with the movies with Tobey Maguire. What do you mean he doesn't have mechanical web shooters? They can't be organic. They've been mechanical. Yeah. That story was written when the Edsel was still a viable vehicle to drive around.
That's right.
And
you could actually go and buy an Edsel.
Yeah, and yet we are still fighting about it in the year like 2005. That's crazy. That kind of impact. No, he's not. You know, is he this paragon of virtue? Probably not. Let's be honest. I think we're all adults. We can acknowledge that he is a consummate businessman. He's branded and labeled himself 1,000 times, and we'll get into more of that because there's some of it that's not so great. But all in all, he has created a legacy in comic books. Nobody else's name is synonymous with comic books outside of our world. Stan Lee's is.
Yeah, I think Stan Lee actually stands out.
So many puns.
The one comic creator you can cite that even non-comic people would not only know his name, but probably recognize if you pointed him out, to the point where one of my favorite things I ever saw, I think this was at Astro City Comic Con, or Space City Comic Con, rather, in Houston, the first year, was this kid who could not have been like 6 or 7 years old, cosplaying Stan Lee.
Right.
And when I went looking for imagery of Stan Lee to use for flavor art for this episode, I found a picture of that same damn kid posing with Stan Lee at one of those photo ops you pay like $100 for.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh my god, that's just amazing to me. I mean, he even had like a little mustache.
That's amazing. And that, I mean,
he was playing the classic Stan Lee, not the mall rats with the full beard.
Can I ask, and we'll close the question on this. I think we've done a decent job of answering Rusty's question here. But who is anybody in any industry, right? Who is as synonymous with their industry for as long as Stan Lee is? Can you name? I can honestly, Dan Rather.
Yeah.
Mike Ditka. You know, these are the names that you have to say next to Stan Lee's name when it comes to representing his chosen industry, and that's pretty amazing, right? Like, he's kind of the Steve Jobs of comic books.
Absolutely, and what you see with Stan Lee is also this legacy, this tremendous aforementioned, you know, the let's do the list thing, but then you do that list and you realize that the man has watched his creations go from the pen and ink, you know, fill the inkwells, to the digital age. He's watched his creations be translated into nearly every possible pop culture genre.
Right.
And he's watched the film industry catch up with his creations in ways that no one could have imagined. I remember seeing a picture of Bob Kane standing with on the Tim Burton's Batman set with Michael Keaton in costume. And just, you know, the man was beaming. What can Stan Lee be thinking when he walks onto the set to play the old man in another film based on a character he created almost universally?
Oh, man.
I mean, Deadpool was one of the few exceptions to his presence in a film that had nothing to do with the characters he created.
Right.
At that point, we'd be sick if Stan Lee was. I think the original logic was you didn't have Stan Lee in The Punisher because he didn't create The Punisher.
Well, that would be like...
But then it got to the point where it'd be like, you don't have an Easter egg at the end of your comic book movie? You don't have Stan Lee in your Marvel movie? You want these things.
But that would be like having the Wright brothers alive today and not having them on like a G5 or a G6. in a commercial yeah. for it, right? Like, you can't not have, you know, the grandfather, the all-father of comic books in a comic book movie if he wants to be. I mean, he offered his services to DC, for God's sakes. He's like, yeah, put me in your movies, why not? Like, yeah. And that, I think, is, in my mind, sort of the hubris of Stan Lee. Like, that is the part where you get into trouble, is where you, and that brings me, you know what, that brings me to another question. Now that we've done that,
I do want to address one thing, because I was looking around some of the research stuff, and there was a someone had reproduced on the internet the Spider's Web, the letters page for one of the Spider-Man titles, presumably right. Spider-Man. And there was, I just happened to glance over part of this letter, and like, oh gosh, we have got to talk about this. To skip ahead a bit into this letter, it says, since a child, I have never liked the popular run of comic book heroes, which get more ridiculous yearly. This is the part I love. Some neighborhood children left a large stack of the usual nonsense in my living room. Well, you think a bunch of vagrant kids coming in, leaving their comics laying around?
Jackasses.
Yeah, I gathered them up for the incinerator, or as I gathered them up, a dingy, well-worn but intact issue of Spider-Man fell to the floor. It was the title that first caught my eye, so I picked it up to see what other oddball hero had invaded comics, and was very much surprised to see the wit and humor in this type of comic. Sadly, Spidey is not available at the local Base PX in Fairbanks. Apparently, this one was like in Delta Junction, Alaska.
Wow.
This was published, which was probably in the, from Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 39, I think it is. But at any rate, you know, we were talking about at least probably the 50s or 60s. She's sent in her for her subscription. But what I loved about this, what really caught my eye beyond just the fact that Stan Lee, who was answering all the fan mail, not only is thanks her for her kind words, but he's also sending her the latest issue of Spider-Man to fill in the blank until her subscription kicks in, which probably back then would have taken 3 weeks to get to Fairbanks. But anyway, the thing that really struck me was the fact that she was gathering these up for the incinerator. So this just spoke back to what we've talked about many times on the show. The modern comic, the value of modern comics is never going to be sustainable because nobody was going and gathering up old comics to throw in the fire pit in 1993.
Right.
2000.
No, you're yeah. Yeah.
Mrs. Melanie Skinner of Delta Junction, Alaska is complicit in the value, in the extremely high value of that and World War II are all complicit in the reason that those comics are worth a fortune and modern comics aren't.
Correct. Maybe one day we'll in the near future we'll be using comic books for fuel, and then 50 years after that, some of my shitty back issues of X-Force will be worth money.
I think some of my Archer and Armstrong will just skyrocket into the Kickers Inc.
All right, so
well, I'm going to say those will not go out to the bath. Those will not be used for toilet paper.
Okay, so we got a fast kind of two parter here that we need to work through. The first one is by a man named Burl Ives, no relation, and it is
silver and gold.
I said no relation.
Silver. Oh, sorry.
I said no relation.
Suddenly he was flashed into the Sandman, the snowman.
What is Stan Lee's best creation?
Jolly Christmas. I'm sorry.
What is Stan Lee's best creation, in your opinion?
Wow.
What
okay,
is his
yeah.
best singular? Like, this is tough.
Again, I'm channeling Brody from Mallrats.
Because the list.
How's one decide?
Right. But in your esteemed opinion, for his, you know,
as
70
a, as a
years
gentleman
of work,
scholar of comics.
Yes.
What was his greatest creation?
Yes.
God, my brain just seized.
And there have been a ton of them, and a lot of them, and his greatest creations are those which...
He didn't create Tire Shark, did he?
He might have, why not? Nobody will claim him. You might
yeah,
as well.
I just...
No, there's a... You know, in my opinion, Stan Lee's greatest creations are those that break with the norm. You know, you have
I
your
think
kind
Stan
of...
Lee's greatest creation is Stan Lee.
Ah, I like that. I like that is good.
Because Stan Lee
good.
Did something nobody else in comics did.
Right.
At least not successfully. And that was to this speaking back to the whole the legend. He built a legend from day one. You know, as soon as he had a good firm grip, and I think it's Spider-Man that did it for him. So in many ways, Spider-Man by default becomes his greatest creation because Spider-Man created – Stan Lee creates Spider-Man. Spider-Man creates Stan, the man, Lee. Because Spider-Man literally gave him the power to do whatever you want.
Right, right.
On the strength of this, we will back anything. And it becomes like any number of authors like Tom Clancy or, you know, where fans complain as the years wear on, like really miss when the author had an editor.
Right? When Stephen King had an editor, it wasn't just like...
With the legend becomes so great that they expand beyond it, and then, you know, it's just loyalty at that point. Not to say that Stan Lee got bad. I think a lot of the later stuff, when he was just trying to throw out stuff to the modern world, you get things like Just Imagine and Stripperella, but...
We're coming up on that. Don't worry.
Or worse still, Baroness Bumblebee. But and there are a handful of people who are going to be laughing themselves silly.
Yes.
That I mentioned Baroness Bumblebee, and now all of a sudden I want some Chips Ahoy. But at any rate, I think really, if you want to know the truth, Stan Lee is Stan Lee's greatest creation because Stan Lee created a persona beyond the man.
Right. Well, he created a brand out of the man.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing...
So Stan Lee begets Spider-Man, Spider-Man begets Stan Lee.
So for I love that's a great answer. I love that answer. For me, you know, there's so many of his, like, I'm going to go a little literal on the creation side. You know, you mentioned Spider-Man, absolutely Spider-Man, Black Panther, for, you know, one of the first extremely popularized, if not one of the absolute first black superheroes, not African-American, but African superheroes. Daredevil, you know, amazing, a blind superhero? What the hell? Like, you know, there are so many, The Watcher, The Hulk,
Well,
Magneto.
The thing is with Daredevil, not just a blind superhero, but a smartly created, he took the idea of blindness and the idea of a character who is imbued with some superpowers and then takes them to this ridiculous extreme where he becomes the man without fear. And it's not because he can't see what's coming. He becomes larger than life in spite of the blindness because he can, you know, it should be enough to just, you know, I can kind of see in a strange and magical way.
Right, right.
But for some reason, that makes me want to don tights and, you know, be in a Dick Grayson-level acrobat.
Right, right. Like, with very little explanation, but sure, we'll buy it. Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, right? Like...
Yeah, at this point. Yeah, I think we were just sort of culturally blinded by Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. So, sure, he's, like, went to law school for years and passed the New York State Bar. And then, apparently for reasons, tapped into previously non-existent... I don't know if he's like channeling tumbling classes his parents sent him to in his youth.
Right. And I love every explanation of how this works. Well, you know, his radar sense makes it more tactile so he can feel, you know, he feels everything. So it gives him a greater balance because he feels it. Like, this doesn't make sense. Just stop. Just allow it. Say Daredevil is Daredevil and don't, and just let it. But my favorite.
Yeah, and fruit bats, or not fruit bats because they have big giant eyes, but you know, like proper bats, like, you know, the ones that have to use radar,
right? Proper bats
also get into weightlifting.
My favorite band from the from 1984, from the musical revolution of 1984, the Proper Bats.
The Proper Bats. They were great. They were one of those early, they started out as a punk band. I mean, we're talking hardcore.
They went new wave. They went over.
And what's weird is they went, and then they transitioned into smooth jazz.
Oh, did they?
In that weird way, the guy from Stray Cats now does big band. I don't know.
Brian Setzer-esque transition
exactly.
From punk
and God bless him for
jazz.
That. Because
damn it,
Grandma loves that smooth jazz.
Grandma loved that. That's the name of their first album.
Ironically, that was the name of their first album when they were punk rockers.
I know, and that gave them the idea. That really opened them up.
They were like revisiting their old history.
But Black Bolt, when you really think about Black Bolt, the character, for me, that is a hit on all fronts comic book character. That is a, if you really stop and think about it, that is an Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, Brian K. Vaughan saga level comic book character that Stan Lee and I believe it was Jack Kirby, because it's a Fantastic Four character, but created out of, you know, way before his time, misunderstood. Because when you think about it, what you have is this sort of Grecian parable about, you know, a god of Olympus that has the power to destroy mountains, but is also, you know, very intelligent and very caring and you know, thoughtful, but can't express any of that.
And apparently can't come up with, like, the world according to Garp chalkboard thing.
They're on the moon, dude. Chalk doesn't work the same on the moon as
it does
here.
Oh, that's so true. There's one thing that we learned from Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks was chalk doesn't work on the moon. That was actually a line in the movie that got overshadowed by that whole Houston, we got a problem thing.
Yeah, so for me, that's...
Check out the deleted scenes.
Check out the deleted scenes. So for me, Black Bolt really was his greatest creation. Now,
and I'm gonna challenge you, because you've opened up a whole new angle here.
Okay.
Challenge you with this one, Doctor Doom.
Doctor Doom
because...
Okay.
You have to stay with me here, kids.
I'm with
Doctor
you.
Doom, because what Lee gives us with Doctor Doom is the sovereign leader of a foreign country, albeit a vicious dictator who rules with an iron fist, but nonetheless the sovereign leader of a country, a foreign national who on repeated whims makes his way onto U.S. soil with impunity, challenging to the breaking point the whole concept of diplomatic immunity.
Right.
By committing any number of heinous crimes on our soil, and then going back home and thumbing his metal nose at the Fantastic Four, daring them to so much as get just, you know, the tiniest wingtip of a pogo plane over their airspace. Just the tip.
Stupid pogo plane. Stupid-ass pogo plane.
But, I mean, literally, that would be like writing a story where, you know, like, Muammar Gaddafi came over and, you know, pissed on the lawn of the White House, flew back home to Libya for a few weeks, then came back and took a dump on, you know, on the Washington Monument grounds, and then
on the top of the Washington
Monument,
and
then knocked over 7-Eleven on his way back to the airport. And nobody's like, you know, there's like zero coverage, and nobody's asking, you know, Dr. Doom's antics, not only, they don't just border, they've crossed the border and built a house on the opposite side of acts of war.
Oh, yeah, no. Absolute, just, you know.
And it's just left to be like, oh, just let him and the FF slug it out.
Nobody.
Well, this isn't like neighborhood toughs in 1930s Brooklyn.
This isn't the Warriors. There's no.
Yeah, I saw it.
There's no black eye baseball game.
Come out and play.
Right. It's not the Warriors, guys. This is an act of war.
Yeah.
Do something about it. Well, okay. Like,
I dare you. I devil dare you.
No, you're right. It's a pretty amazing creation. Like, but, you know, a lot of his...
That's one of those that's out there with Daredevil. Nobody bothered to quite, like,
yeah.
That dimension doesn't make it a whole lot of damn sense.
Right. So the second part to this question is brought to us by somebody... Now, this was written well in advance of the show. I need you to understand that.
Okay,
so this person sent this to me well in advance of the show. The question is, what's the worst thing?
By the way, who's this coming from? Is this like Meaty Jim or?
I'm going to say the question first, and then I'm going to tell you who it's from.
Ed Mad.
What's the worst thing Stan Lee ever created? Question poised to us by Edie M. Dinah of the.
Edie
M. Dinah.
Edie, I'm glad you wrote to us to ask your question. Love the name. It's such a plucky name for a young girl. Harkening back to it.
It's really conjuring.
Kind of Americana you rarely see in this country anymore.
It's conjuring images,
Edie,
in my head that I don't need to have.
As I reflect and take a draw off of my pipe and... okay, anyway, Edie M...
EDM Dinah.
EDM!
Nothing like Edie Amin. I mean, kind of. I mean, but. Whoo! Yeah, that's the name of the totally real person that sent that
Uganda
question.
If Uganda had the internet back in the 70s.
Are you going to be my girl?
It would have been Edie Amin. I wonder who that could have been. What a clever nom de plume there. Let's see here. Worst creation. Wow. Again, you know, how does one decide?
And this is, you know, and the way I'm looking at this question is there wasn't any real specifics from Edie's question, right? So I'm looking at this as across the board, 70 years of a career.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
And he's not entirely to blame, but I actually have formulated my answer in full.
Okay.
Overkill. I stand corrected.
Okay.
Overkill was McFarlane's
right.
appropriation of Overkill.
Okay, so break down Overkill a little bit for those of us that might
okay.
not know.
For those of you familiar with Spawn, think Overkill. And you're done. You've got the easy job. For the first time, as a fan of Spawn, you have the easy job. So, for those of you who are not Spawn fans and then cannot have the Overkill fallback, you just say, oh, funny. So, basically the same character? Pretty much. Overkill was the kind of jam session creation when somebody got the idea, you know what goes together in the kind of Reese's peanut butter cup way? If by Reese's peanut butter cup you took like beluga caviar and shoved it inside like a McGriddle, because
right.
they're not things that are complementary of one another at all, and one of them is elegant and much sought after, and the other is like some hackneyed piece of bread. So what? I actually, personally, not to be too aggrandizing here, but I am actually in awe that I was able to construct all of that off the top of my head in the moment.
Yeah, you're the Stan Lee of really wide-ranging metaphors involving weird food substances. Thank you for that. You are off the reservation tonight, sir.
I tell ya. So Stan Lee, somebody got the idea back when VHS tapes were still a thing.
Okay.
That, and this actually, I saw this come through when we were working for Diamond. There was a 1992, I believe it was 1992, let's see if I can pin this down, but there was a... I think it may have been a series of video cassettes called Comic Book Greats. And Comic Book Greats, whoever was producing this, got the idea, why don't we get Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, we're talking the point where they're at the height of their questionable powers.
Right.
So let's take what many were willing to consider the new guard.
Correct, yes.
Let's take the hot young...
The young Turks of comics.
Yeah, the young guns, and let's pair them with, like, the young... Let's pair them with the legend.
Right.
So...
It's like that sad Key and Peele sketch where... Have you seen the Stan Lee Key and Peele sketch?
No.
Where... Oh, you need to find the YouTube to the Key and Peele sketch and post it with this if you can. I'll try to find it for you and send you the link to it. But where they're in the boardroom for some comic company, right? They're in the writer's room and they're like, yeah, okay... You know, I ran into a comic legend at the coffee shop, and I invited him to come in and talk to us. Stan Lee is here, and he comes in with a bunch of pitches for, you know, this is a young upstart, like it would be like Image now, you know, and Stan Lee comes in, and he's got like all these like storyboards for comics that are just like the guy who drives too aggressively behind me on the highway, and you know, like it would be like that.
Exactly. Well, I did a little looking here. Apparently, Comic Book Greats was created in 1991 as a series of little documentary cassettes by Starber Home Video, hosted by Stan Lee interviewing different comic creators. So it wasn't so much like somebody got the idea of pairing them up. They were just going to have Stan Lee interview comic creators. So in the first video, who does he interview? Todd McFarlane. Second, who does he interview? Rob Liefeld. So what I said earlier about that not being the case was wrong. Then apparently in the third video, they threw people a bone by having him interview Sergio Aragonés, who deserves to be interviewed by Stan Lee. Then in the fourth video, to mix things up, they got Stan Lee, Todd McFarlane, and Rob Liefeld to do a jam session and create an original character in 20 minutes.
Good God.
And, of course, in Stan Lee fashion, they go with overkill. I can see him just, like, pitching this in the same way. He would be like, why don't we have a character called Dormammu?
Right. This is what the kids like. The kids like killing, and the kids like overkilling. I've seen the Grand Theft Autos. I know what the kids like.
And that's a term nobody's used yet, so let's grab it by the balls.
That's right.
This is an older Stan Lee. He's a little more willing to say things like that.
Paid his dues. He can say balls.
Yeah. Liefeld and McFarlane come up, design this character that would later be appropriated by McFarlane Comics as Overkill for as a Spawn villain who actually was an action figure in the very first and craptastic wave of Spawn action figures back when people thought that was pretty cool. And then, in all fairness, McFarlane Toys stepped it up. They got a lot better sculptors. They started making some great stuff. The figures would fall apart like crap, but they were really nice looking. But anyway, that's...
spoken like a true action figure collector, Cole. That's,
I mean, any line of figures where you go in, like, case fresh, limbs are falling off the figure inside the blister... routinely in the age of people saving everything in the package.
You sound like
I literally heard people saying, well, yeah, I collect McFarlane, but they're not going to be worth anything because they fall apart in the package.
You sound like every one of my, like, the people that I kind of run with on Reddit in the action figure collectors group that's just basically descended into pictures of people who take the Build-A-Figure out of the packages and put other Build-A-Figure, you know, and then put them back on the shelf.
I just recently saw a picture, a Darla figure from the... More Action Collectibles Buffy the Vampire Slayer line from like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Supplanted Supergirl, the...
Really?
The CW Supergirl in her package. Yet they left the Doomsday arm in place. They didn't just like put a Lincoln log in there or something.
A hot dog. It's like a hot dog.
I have seen like dollar store Batman figurine crammed inside the spot where a part of an accessory was.
But that's what we sound like. God, we're getting old and crotchety in our collecting old age.
So I don't even know if I've come close to the question.
I think
point.
You did. I think you were talking about Overkill and how awful it was.
Oh yeah, who was the worst? Overkill.
Okay, so I've got
the short answer is Overkill.
I'm going to handle one for
you. The short
you.
Answer is also rare for me.
I'm going to handle one for you that I think falls into the category for both of us, and I'm going to need your help to explain why
I
it's
do
awful. Want to
make a disclaimer real quick. Prior to Overkill, Impossible Man to pop up.
I think you're wrong. I know that's a bold statement, but I think you're wrong about Stanley's worst creation, and I think you're about to agree with me, and I think you're about to explain why. I'm just going to say the name, and then I'm going to basically it's like opening the cage on the bloodhounds, you know, after the prisoners escape. So are you ready?
All right. Let's Ramsey Bolton this.
Nightcat.
I hate you.
Yes, I win.
I hate you. How dare you come up to Olympus and steal my Overkill thunder?
Okay, so why do we hate Nightcat, Cole? Because I love listening to you talk. The whole reason for this whole issue.
I think the point where we really, the hatred begins, it swirls around we talked earlier about Stan Lee creating Stan Lee.
Right.
This was Stan Lee attempting to...
God.
It becomes like a poor copy. Like taking fifth graders into the Metropolitan saying, oh, do like these art students here and copy this Van Gogh. I'm sure there are people who've been to the Metropolitan that you realize the Van Gogh does not, the Metropolitan does not have a Van Gogh in its collection, Cole. I don't know. I'm spitballing here. You know, let's go look at a Monet or a Raphael or like, so shut the hell up. Something classical. And you take, you know, your fifth grade art class in there with finger paints and they're supposed to try to, you know, recreate a Mondrian on a piece of manila paper. This was the Mondrian on manila paper with finger paints and not the good Crayola finger paints, but the crappy stuff that you buy at the dollar store. That was Shadow Cat.
Nightcat. Yes.
God, my apologies to Shadow Cat.
Right. Let's
that
not.
That was Nightcat. Yeah. I'm like, boy, all the Kitty Pride people are going to come smack me upside the head in my next con appearance.
all those Sprite fans coming down on your hard.
Oh, man. With Sprite bottles. I'm probably the old school, like the glass ones. That was Nightcat, and Stan Lee is the actual Mondrian.
So, for those of you that don't know what Nightcat is,
of you who are unfamiliar with Pete Mondrian's work, go ahead.
Nightcat, so there was a period of time. Thankfully, we've kind of moved out of this and into, we're happy enough to have our comic book movies and our comic book TV shows at this point. But there was a period of time where, and we've talked about it on the show, where there was a big push to cross comics over into real life. To convince us, like Cole told a story on that particular issue about the letters pages in the comic books where they would have Wolverine address the writers of those letters as if it were real life. Like,
to disillusion you, bub. We are real.
Yeah.
No,
you're not. No, you're not.
Not at all.
But in an attempt to break the two-dimensional wall, Stan Lee created a singer that would turn into a superhero in real life in the form of Nightcat.
And to make it even more structured and frightening and ridiculous, and the adjectives just begin to fall on each other like so many dominoes, they actually got a singer model actress.
Jacqueline Talvarez, yes.
Yes, to throw her career away, hitching it to the fading, white dwarf star of... Nightcat. There are actresses who were, you know, had cameo appearances on Night Court who are more famous now.
Right.
Than the Nightcat. But the idea was you had it was almost as is it meta? I don't know. I'm old people.
I don't even
meta
think
where they were trying to like engineered meta.
Yeah, it
where
was, yeah.
You were trying to have the reality become the comic and the comic become the reality, and both sort of feed off of one another. And this came at a period where the embodiment model had come in, like, you know, Catherine told the tale of the actual Al Simmons in his underwear.
Right, and that's, yeah, that's
as,
what it, yeah.
As he doffed his Spawn garb. And you had this was around the period where I believe you may have even had the first of Harris Publications just parade of Vampirellas.
Oh, long-ass Vampirella was out there. Evil Ernie and the Chaos Comics, like, castles that they would build at comic conventions. We
oh, yeah.
About those, like...
Spawn Mo Van would come, you know, take up the entire center aisle. And it was a heady time for independent comics. Because suddenly they were validated, and they just validated all over everything.
So they created this. So Stanley wanted to create, basically, go the route of your Disney model. You create a star. You know, with no real background in recording music. There wasn't a YouTube at the time that you would get famous with a bunch of YouTube hits and then record a demo and get.
Yeah,
you know.
And unfortunately, there wasn't that. There wasn't auto-tune yet either.
Oh, I know.
Did I go there? I've never heard any of her music, but
no,
I'm sure it would have benefited greatly from auto-tune, regardless of her skill set.
So they found a model. They had that model. They started calling that model Nightcat. They created a backstory in real life for her based on the creation of Stan Lee as if it were a comic book character. So they created her first. This idea that this real person is this drugged out weird 90s idea that this real person was a singer turned superhero. Then,
with her flash dance superhero outfit.
Right. Then to validate this fact, they created, almost like in absentia, a comic book as reverse proof that she exists.
Yeah, it was sort of a reverse engineering. And if you're unfamiliar with Nightcat, imagine like the thigh revealing, you know, revealing of the thigh all the way up to the thorax. Type of you know, flash dance type of outfit done up in leather, kind of like the you know what Psylocke would become. So if you saw, I haven't seen it yet, but the Age of Apocalypse.
Right, it's that weird 90s
that
bikini onesie,
super 80s-90s. Yeah.
Yeah,
except done up with lots of, you know, cross shoelaces across the bodice.
Yeah, laced up and just fringe for days.
And, yeah, they went wild at Tandy Leathercraft.
Right. Easy Rider becomes Easy Hider because you use that to hide every crack and crevice on the body. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you take that plus the requisite headband.
Right. Leather headband.
You superimpose, like you Photoshop Linda Hamilton back to
the damn it! That was my joke. I hate you. I guess I did make you talk about
it. Revenge.
I guess I did make you talk. I was going to say.
Superimpose Linda Hamilton's face that in the 3 years that she was really hot. And give her the staff of General Grievous's bodyguards.
I like
minus the lightning. And you have Nightcat.
I like to say that Nightcat looks like if Linda Hamilton acted in a bus and truck company version of Hell Comes to Frogtown. That's what this would be. That's what this would be. Because that's absolutely so. Yes, not only that. Now, okay, so they created the singer retro. Origin storied her with a comic book, and then, you know, some North Korean press ganged her into releasing a shitty album.
Yeah.
All
I
of
mean,
which
the, for she held the sort of Ed Wood Music Award
right
for worst album ever.
The Razzies.
Until, that, until up to the point that that She Bangs
She
guy
Bangs from, William Hung came out.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, all in an effort, I believe, like, you know, the Eyes Wide Shut, you know, mask party. This is the comic book creator, like, let's get a girl and destroy her. Just
exactly. Let's crush someone's dreams.
Just absolutely. We'll convince her that this is a great idea, and we'll destroy her will to live.
I want to read an excerpt from, I'm guessing this may be from the actual comic, or something associated with it.
Oh, no.
There's a picture of the character there, and you know, drawing. It says Night Cat in blue. And below it, here's the text. Now, here's an original, semicolon, a pop music star who fights crime, too. In this, her debut release, Night Cat proves herself able to knock off Paula Abdul as queen of the pop charts, as well as knock off criminals in her neighborhood.
You, let that...
Nightcap, the album, is chock full of danceable tunes heavily influenced by house and rap music. But don't be fooled. All of a sudden, it like, turns into Professor Farnsworth. But don't be fooled. Under the seemingly straight pop influence lies the voice with cause. I can give any validation to the rest of this. I will cite Tom Danning as the author, whoever he was, as his career crashed and burned, as along with Night Cat herself, like just like they were on Buddy Holly's plane or something.
What? Wow!
Their careers, anyway.
Holy Lord, this got dark. I found a whole article from 1991 in the Chicago Tribune about Nightcat, by the way. This just so. Okay, that's enough. Nightcat is the worst creation.
Also, go online. If you look up Nightcat, look for the... somebody has published the Bullpen Bulletins from Marvel.
Oh, no.
In which Stan Lee himself writes a, I think it's like 8-paragraph, 9-paragraph article that surrounds the iconic, I guess it's iconic, image of Nightcat. So there you have it. Yes. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm choking on vomit because you tore open a bitter wound there. I feel like Lancelot and Paul Verhoeven's Excalibur. The old wound, my king!
Here's a quote as we wrap up Nightcat. A quote from Tavares, okay? I was a fan of Wonder Woman, but what I always thought was... Oh, no, okay. This is horribly written. I was a fan of Wonder Woman, but I always thought what's missing is that she doesn't sing.
I'm sorry, I'm choking on my vomit again.
Okay, into that. Now, as we wrap it up, I got one more question, and then we'll wrap this up and get out of here. I think we've done our FAQ question askers. I think a lot of due diligence and deference tonight. Apparently, Amerigo Vespucci asks this question, and I think it's an apropos question for Amerigo Vespucci to ask. What will Stan Lee's lasting legacy to comics be?
Wow, America.
Came back from the dead.
Yeah, apparently, when not world exploring in the distant past, he returns to us several hundred years later. To pose the question, as anyone of the 15th century might, it was a pressing question, the 15th century. Of course, one would be burned as a heretic if they asked it. But, wow, what is Stan Lee's legacy?
Yeah, and I'm going to let you field this one. You'll do a much more eloquent job than I would, because I'll just say Nightcat again.
I'm surprised that, you know, Nightcat for Stan Lee has not become like, you know, for Robin Williams, Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses, or Italian Stallion for Sylvester Stallone, you know, or for Lucas, the Star Wars Holiday Special.
I would really like to be at the last convention that Stanley's ever going to appear at, announcing Stanley and announce him as the creator of Nightcat.
Well, you know, damn it, now I want to track down, because Stan Lee will actually be making his final convention appearance. One of the things that bumped this Stan Lee profile like 7 months ahead of its original schedule was the fact that on New Year's Eve in Dallas, Texas, Stan Lee will make his final convention appearance. He is retiring this year, and literally at the end of this year at the Nerdtacular New Year's Eve. Look it up. This is the final official Stan Lee convention appearance ever.
Right, right.
And I thought, we've got to do this. And there's so much else scheduled before the end of the year. I thought, okay, we got to cover this, because next week we got to talk about Doctor Strange. Otherwise,
we lose momentum. Yeah.
So, part of his legacy is right there. I think that it is that craterous impact. That Stan Lee's name will forever, 100 years after his death, Stan Lee Presents will still mean something to people.
Yeah.
And his greatest legacy, I think, was given to us by Hollywood.
Okay.
By those cameos that we've come to love. Because every single one of those is just like a little, you know, to paraphrase Shakespeare, a little touch of Stan Lee in the night.
Cat.
Little Nightcat.
In the Nightcats.
So now I'm going to challenge Hollywood now. I want a Nightcat cameo.
In Daredevil.
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah.
Or in Jessica Jones, where she can just kick the crap out of Nightcat.
Or like where they have, they can introduce Patsy could become Hellcat.
Right. Damn it.
But I really think that in many ways, the lasting legacy will be the name Stan Lee.
I agree. And I don't think there's any better way to wrap up this issue, this creator spotlight, than with that. Because for
but
all
also,
of...
real quick, if you do look up Stan Lee when he was in the Army, U.S. Army Signal Corps, if you're able to find a picture of that, he looks like a young Bob Hope. Young Stan Lee looks like young Bob Hope. He's like looking up from his drawing room. No, I'm not here to entertain the troops. I don't have a golf club here. I'm actually with the Corps. I don't know. He would affect a Bob Hope accent while denying being Bob Hope. It was a weird syndrome. Similar to shell shock, but a little more targeted.
All right, why don't you wrap us up and we'll get out of here for the evening.
Way to undermine my own poignancy there, by the way. But
I just should have come in with that hot and then back down to where
yeah.
Stan Lee is the legacy of Stan Lee.
I just completely declassed myself. So with that, I would say that we're coming to you from the now newly declassed Jedi Cold Universe at JediCold.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can find us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. We're on Facebook, Jedi Cole Universe. Hey Kids Comics is there as well. We mentioned, was it Edna?
It was
Edie.
M. Dina.
Edie Aminia, Eddie Medina, and I, the Rancor Pit. Is also on Facebook. You can catch Eddie and I on the Rancor Pit Live on watchonairlive.com. And that will be the first and third Sundays of every month, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Central. Again, first and third Sundays of the month. We are now in our new studios in the CBS Radio building, and it is freaking incredible. So be sure and catch me and Eddie and our own talk lord. This is Zach. Every other Sunday, roughly, as long as we don't have one of those damn five Sunday months and it gets awkward. join our Twitter feed. Check out the Rancor Pit YouTube channel to catch up with Eddie and my antics out in the field and on our live show. And if you can be in Dallas, go check out the Nerd Year's Eve festivities, because it is Stan Lee's last hurrah, as it were.
There you go. And, you know, I have a little bit of a special message. You know, we're in a really divisive time, and we don't usually get super political unless we're doing a funny show on politics with comic book Bernie Sanders and all that.
Balloon drop.
But we all, as comic book fans, people, nerds, geeks, we all come from a very divisive background. We're used to being bullied and told we're weird and outsiders and outcasts. And I think people on both sides of the aisle have felt that way in the last year, in the last few weeks especially. And, you know, regardless of whether you're happy with what happened or you're not happy with it, remember that if you're listening to this show, chances are you felt like somebody that you felt opposed to in the last year or in the last few weeks. Have an argument about a comic book. And I don't often proffer this. Have an argument about who would win in a comic book fight. Have an honest, good old-fashioned argument about that. Get it away from politics. Find something unifying. Remember who we are. Because at the end of the day, if you're listening to this show, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, you're a comic book fan. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics, and talk about them with your friends, because that's what brought us all together in the first place, if you're one of us.
Absolutely.
And with that being said, I think we're going to go. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody, and we'll be back here next week with the aforementioned. We're gonna go looking for some Strange next week.
We're gonna go hunting for some Strange, and also we're gonna discuss the. And I don't care if this is a spoiler or not, because screw him for not putting him in. The distinct lack of Renta in this movie. I'm writing a strongly worded email as we speak.
Oh yes, indeed. I was on. As you'll find out next week, I was applauding the fact that they didn't rush Clea into the mix.
Yeah, that's
but at the same time, Andrew is a little miffed that they didn't rush Renta straight to the
Listen,
place.
I have a void in me that can only be filled with a giant extra-dimensional green Minotaur, and it's not been filled yet. Somebody needs to do something about that. All right, everybody, we'll talk to you next week. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.